ranked one of America's top research universities, the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee plays a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Meet the people behind the creativity and discoveries on UWM today. Here's the host, Tom Lujack, Vice Chancellor of University Relations.
With Wisconsin's only School of Architecture, UW-Milwaukee has played a special role in shaping the look and the feel of the buildings and the cities that we live in. On this edition of UWM Today, we're going to take a look at a fascinating program within the School of Architecture, one that examines not just the physical spaces that we occupy, but the cultural and social aspects of our built environments. It's called the Buildings, Landscapes, and Cultures Field School. It's where students come face-to-face with the people living in the spaces being studied. Our guests today are Associate Professor in the School of Architecture, Arjit Sen. He is joined by Chelsea Waite, a doctoral candidate, and Camille Mays, who's a member of the Sherman Park neighborhood in the city of Milwaukee. Sherman Park is the focus of the Buildings, Landscape, Culture, Field School experience this year. Arjit, great to have you with us. Welcome to all of you. And let's begin with the origin of the program. This sounds pretty interesting, where you're not coming in and just looking at what a building looks like, but you're actually talking about what happens in those buildings.
Thank you, Tom. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm a vernacular architecture historian and an architect. And so I've been always interested in the everyday landscape, the buildings that surround us, that give meaning to our lives. In 2012, I had come to Milwaukee for a while, and I started looking around in Milwaukee. The first thing that occurred to me is how segregated the landscape was. You know, you cross the river and it's a whole different world. You go down, it's a different world. So I was interested in how those different worlds are created. We started, we worked with people in Thurston Woods that year, and we started asking people what their world meant to them. So which are the places that matter to everyday people, residents, community members? That's how all this started. This grew. We started thinking that it's going to be an architecture field school. We are going to look at everyday places. We are going to focus on people's homes. But very quickly, it grew. It started incorporating art, theater, dance, all kinds of other performing arts. We got connected with public history. And it suddenly became more of a social and cultural engagement with the community and a long-term one. And so here we are in Sherman Park after, I think, 8 years. We've been in Sherman Park for 3 years now. And we've been working with Sherman Park. And my entire semester, like summer, fall, and spring, is somehow connected with work that we do in Sherman Park.
Let's bring Chelsea into this. You're one of the students working closely with Arjit. What has it been like for you as a student to leave the textbooks back in the classroom and walk into the neighborhood?
Well, in architecture, we kind of bridge the arts, the humanities, sciences. And when it comes to thinking about the impact of our work and our designs, we kind of fall into a business mindset, thinking about users and clients and the design of buildings.
Because that's what pays the bills, right?
Exactly. But with buildings, landscapes, cultures, we kind of take a look, broader look at how buildings fit into the context and a broader look at users, not just the users of a building at one point in time, but everyone who's going to come in and out of the building, walk by it, see it, and have it appear in their everyday routines. So we think of architecture within this broader picture, and that helps it relate to more people. It also makes our work more meaningful, and I specifically look at it through architecture history and how people care for the world around them, and in turn, the world around them cares for them. And this is a theme in my work that's come out of the field school. As we interview people, we have a whole slew of questions for them, from memories of the neighborhood to who they talk to. We try to get kind of an anthropological style portrait.
Arjit, as I hear Chelsea describe the experience as a student, I ask myself, so where does this lead people like Chelsea and others who are studying architecture? Does it change the way that they go about building buildings in the future?
Yes, it does. I have been teaching architecture for more than 20 years as an assistant professor first and now an associate professor. And as I'm getting older and I'm seeing the world around me, I think my focus has been to build citizens. I think we won't have a world around us if we don't have good, committed citizens. The American Institute of Architects have come up with an idea called the citizen architect model. And that model has to ask professionals, architects, to think of what their contribution to the world around them is. And that contribution goes beyond simply making a building. It goes into making communities. And that's where I think, Chelsea has been with us since the very beginning in the field school. 2012, she helped me set this up. And our goal, as we have learned from community members, is that in addition to the built environment, in addition to places as if they're programs that people use, there is an essence of that space that gives meaning to their lives. And most of the meaning comes through a very interesting concept that we discovered. We wanted to know what stewardship means because we are preservationists, historians, and so on. But very quickly we learned that while stewardship is an intentional act, in the community, people would make their world through acts of caring. The ethics of caring, we learned, is a much more everyday practice that allows people to engage with each other and their built environment and produce communities. So when we look at architecture from that viewpoint, we begin to see that citizenship or becoming committed citizens is intrinsically connected to building and the world around us.
So Camille, let's bring you into the conversation. You are one of those community members.
Yes.
Sherman Park is where the field school has been operating the last few years. What has it been like to have folks from the architecture school in your place, in your environment?
It's been really good. One thing that I really love about Arijit and his students and some of the other professors, actually, too, that I've worked with in the architecture and urban planning, is that when we have a lot of people coming into the community, they have good intentions. A lot of them have good intentions, and they think they know what the community needs, but they don't. And a lot of times, we're not included in the process. And something pops up in the neighborhood, and it's either not appreciated or not useful to the people in the community. And so in my work that I do with Peace Garden Project and just in my community work that I do, it's really important for me to get the community's input. So all the work that I do, I implement the community's input in that, and I always push for other people to include the community in the process. And so with Arijit's group, they get the input. They find out what the people really want or what they really need for the spaces in the area. And this big, scary gentrification word has been thrown around a lot, in neighborhoods when they're being upgraded. And so, as Chelsea was saying, people come into communities with a different lens, just a business lens, and not like a sense of the community lens and what overall is needed. And all of the things aren't put into perspective. It's kind of looked at a macro level instead of a micro, and the reasons why things are this way. An example, the youth don't have anything. And people are like, oh, they'll just tear it up. But they're not giving them the opportunity to have it. And so that's what happens with a lot of spaces. When they do something, maybe something goes awry with it one time and then they just give up. But maybe talk to the people in the area, see what they need. Maybe they need specific things. Those things will get utilized.
How easy was it to accept the folks from UWM's architecture school when they first showed up? Was there any suspicion or a sense that, why are these folks here? Why do they want to know about my neighborhood?
Yeah, sometimes because, what people don't understand is the community is very, very willing to work with people who they feel are genuine. A lot of people come to our communities with intent, and they get a lot of money. And the initiatives don't trickle down, or the people who are really doing the work don't get funded. And so you see a lot of missed things. And so when they came in and people saw that they were truly genuine, we were like, oh my gosh, is somebody to help us do all of these things we want to do? And that's what they've done. You know, where we didn't have funding or support or exposure, he's given us that, you know. And so now we can get out some of our initiatives or some of the drawings and the data that people have to pay a lot of money for that grassroots organizers and organizations don't have. It's like a trade-off. They help us, we help them, and we look at all the data and we pull together to come up with a solution for the spaces.
Camille, you mentioned when people come into the community, sometimes they bring money with them, hoping to make more money. Has the connection to students like Chelsea and professors like Arijit, has that given you ammunition in terms of being able to respond to developers or communicate to the builders in a way differently now?
Absolutely. So basically, it's another group of UWM students at the architecture school, and they're looking at working with the community and the aldermen on some spaces. And it was very easy for me to jump right in and take the lead with them on the project because we've been doing the work. We've been mapping it out. We know what the residents are saying they want. We've been doing the survey, so it makes it really easy. And they were really willing, you know, to work with us. And so that made it even that much more, you know, better. And so we can do more if it's more people working together instead of the silos that you often see in the community. Because it's always like that, right? This organization has two or three people here, and this church has this going on, and then it's never an improvement in the area. That's because it's not unity. And so it allowed unity. And it's a big block of neighborhood now that we got going on, and we're looking at creating some really good things in the spaces. And we've done charrettes, and we've talked a lot. And I just see a really different landscape of the neighborhood that we've been working on, and it's a significant change.
You're listening to UWM Today here on WUWM. Good to have you with us this week. I'm Tom Lujak, and this week we're talking about a program in UWM's School of Architecture and Urban Planning. It's called the Buildings, Landscape, Cultures Field School. Arijit Sin is the associate professor who's leading the program, currently working with people in the Sherman Park area, although, Arijit, you've, as you mentioned before, have worked in other neighborhoods, coming in and helping to create, it sounds like a more of a complete portrait of what life is like in those communities rather than just looking at the type of structures or buildings that have evolved over time. When you hear somebody like Camille describe that partnership that you've been able to create, how does that make you feel as the person leading the program? Do you think you're successful? Are there things that you haven't been able to accomplish yet that you hope to, knowing that Camille and her neighbors have pretty high expectations?
Yeah. One of the things that be central to our methodology is storytelling. And storytelling might seem like we're sitting around just talking to each other, but stories have tremendous power. Because what stories do is it galvanizes people into action. Stories are related to action. So when Camille says that we've been in this community and the you know impact we might have made, it's really heartening. It makes it worthwhile, everything that we do. But I have to also say that I learned a lot from the community. So when you just mentioned that we have gone to other neighborhoods. So when we started this program, it was built in the model of field schools in historical archaeology or architecture preservation, where we would go to different neighborhoods. We will pick up the history of the neighborhood, we'll do this analysis, and then we'll go to another neighborhood. So originally we thought that we're going to take North Avenue, which is in urban planning terms a transect, a cross-section of the city. And if you start in the historic Watertown neighborhood and end at Sherman Park, you get to see all kinds of ecologies, all kinds of demographics, and various forms of historical evidence. But soon, one of the community members looked at me in my eye and said, "Why are you here in this community for one semester or one summer?" And it occurred to us that if you are actually doing something, a field school in a city, there's a certain ethical component to it, to stay there for a long period of time. And that's when we decided that every neighborhood we go to, we're going to be at least there for 3 years. The first neighborhood was Washington Park. We were there for 3 years. And then we just moved slightly north to Sherman Park because we also realized when you have this kind of committed long-term engagement, things happen that you didn't plan would happen. You also make great friends. One of the things that there were tons of things that happened which we didn't intend would happen. And so when you look at it from the point of view of a long-term commitment in a neighborhood, you realize that the products of it far exceed what we started off as. So that's one of the heartening things. Now, what did we not achieve? Stories. We started saying that stories generate more stories, and more stories generate civic action. But at the same time, it's hard to expect people in the neighborhood to constantly be there working on this. Everybody has three jobs. There's so many other things to do. So very soon I realized that it's not something that, it's not us going into the neighborhood or the neighbors working with us. It's a bunch of people coming together. Mm-hmm. That's when I started reaching out to, you know, people in the Peck School of the Arts, people in public history, and also various people in the neighborhood, various different organizations. And now it's completely changed what we do. We are not there with a mission or some reason. We are there in three different contexts, spring, summer, and fall, through different classes, and new unexpected results emerge. It's been fun, just kind of discovering what happens.
Camille, what do you think Sherman Park could or should look like 3 years, 5 years down the road, as opposed to what it is today as a result of this program?
Just what I love about Arijit's class and the work that they've done is that they've mapped out the neighborhood and mapped out the spaces. And not only did they map out the spaces that we can create and make new things, but they looked at safety aspects and they took into consideration all of the things that we told them, why people sit in the front instead of in the back, you know, the factors of why people feel safe and why they don't versus one neighborhood, you know, to another, and why you can have certain things on one block but not the other. You know, you have millionaires on Grant and you have people in poverty two blocks away. You know, just all of those factors and factoring that in. And I think that we can see a lot of vacant lots into positive spaces, good social spaces, art spaces, fitness spaces, recreation spaces. It's just an endless amount of ideas because, you know, they did deconstruction of, 100 homes in Sherman Park? Add that on top of the vacant lots that were already there, you know, and map that out, you know, and there's some good house ideas for vacant houses. I know that for a while, a lot of organizations and organizers were talking about community resource houses, art houses, houses where the community members and organizations led it, but police officers could come in from time to time. I see the city's picked up a model similar to that, you know, so it could be, you know, a whole new landscape. The youth of Sherman Park are often in the news, which is unfortunate because I don't think that they should be demonized.
Spotlight in national news.
Yeah, I work with the youth a lot, and it's a lot of awesome youth actually in Sherman Park, and they aren't all as horrible as people seem to think they are, but it would create a lot of things for the youth too. And then all of those things are going to need maintenance. Maybe that could be training or some type of summer jobs for the youth.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm just thinking about all of the endless possibilities and the buildings and houses and what we can do with it.
It sounds like the class gives you a license to take your dreams forward and say, this is possible.
Pretty much just to shape whatever, you know, pretty much whatever I've told them that my goals was, you know, what I wanted to do with Peace Garden and just with Middle Ground Group and some of the things that we wanted to do, what they basically did was made our dreams come true. They brought it to life. We don't have funding. We don't have support, you know, from a lot of bigger organizations in the city. And so they came in, they saw that. They saw a need for us to have support And so they did, you know, they kind of bridged the gap and helped us with those things.
And we should, for our listeners, just describe the Peace Garden Project briefly, because that really is a really cool thing in Sherman Park.
Okay, so the Peace Garden Project, in short, it started off with memorials. We see those plagued in our city streets, you know, when it's an accident or homicide. And what I do as a service to the community and the family who suffered the loss is take the bottles and the candles and all of that away, and I plant perennials with the family and the community members there.
Really, really nice. A lasting memorial that's alive.
And yes, and it's in respect to the people who lost their loved ones and the community members who lived there.
Very neat. Yeah. Chelsea, as a student, you've got a lot of classmates who are having this experience for the first time. How does it change a student's view of what architecture should be?
It takes it from abstraction, like I talked about users and clients, kind of just, it could be anybody, to real people with real lives and real families and who might just want a chair to sit on or a bench on the corner.
Are students, I mean, you've been with the program for a while, so you may be a little atypical since you were on the ground floor with Arjit when the program got rolling. Do students ever feel wary or intimidated walking into a space that they've never been in before, a neighborhood that they've never visited?
For sure. There are lots of UWM students who from somewhere receive the advice not to cross the river. And I see a lot of my classmates kind of have trepidation about going across the river or crossing the Holton Street. And, you know, they don't really know how to behave or what to do in public.
They're reading the headlines and worried that they might be a victim of a crime that they might have seen.
Yeah.
So how long does it take for them to relax and realize that there are great people here like Camille who are ready to put their arms out and say, welcome?
Probably just a couple hours. I think once we get on the sidewalk and talk to people, people might ask us what we're doing there. Once they start talking to somebody, it's a pretty quick process of opening up.
From your standpoint, Camille, that's got to be kind of cool to see, right? People who've not been in your Sherman Park neighborhood suddenly saying, oh, that's why this is such a popular place to live.
Oh, yeah. My activist hat comes on when I talk to the students the first time. So we dispel a lot of myths about the community when I talk to them. And then they see people like me and the community partners who we work with in some of those rough areas. But they know that it's people out there. And they know that some of the misconceptions are a little bit twisted. Yes, it's bad, of course. But it's not as many bad as good. And that's what I think people learn once they come into the neighborhood, that it's not all these bad people running around. You know, it's really not that way.
Of course, the truth is bad things can happen anywhere and do.
Mm-hmm.
But not all of them are regularly featured in the 6 o'clock newscast.
And then it helps me because it gives me an outlet to reach people who I may not have reached, because it's people who come from rural parts of Wisconsin and they have totally different views. And they've told me, some of the students, but now they can see things, you know, again with a different lens, and maybe they'll grow up differently. This is the most racist, you know, city. And so I think it helps with that too. And I think they do take it back home, and I ask them to, you know, and have conversations. And I love that part of it, because I have not came across anybody in all the years who, after they kind of let that down and was open-minded, who just resisted it. No one's resisted it. Even if they didn't agree with some of the things, they opened their mind to see it, you know, from a different perspective. And I really appreciate that part of it, too, because I don't have the opportunity to go to talk to a lot of the people who they'll sit down at dinner with.
Yeah,
you know, and
you could spread the word through them.
Right. Hey, I had this experience. Guess what? It was not like you told me. Yeah. It was actually this way, and it was some really nice people, and this is what's going on.
Arjit, how long will you stay in the Sherman Park neighborhood, and what's next after?
Well, that's a difficult question. We are in Sherman Park and Washington Park. Now it's two neighborhoods we are working with. I think we're going to stay there longer than what we promised. So it's going to be longer than 3 years. And that's simply because we have, the longer you stay, there are more opportunities of learning that come up. And all this, actually, while at the same time I really appreciate the community working on this, I have to say that our students, they are just incredible. Mm-hmm. Whether it's the summer school or in the fall studio or in the spring research class, I have undergraduate students, graduate students, and doctoral students working together. So it's kind of a vertical learning process. And one of the reasons I think staying matters is I'll give you a very specific example. We know about foreclosure and eviction. That's, Matthew Desmond has written about it. Most of our students know that as a theoretical, you know, this is what happens. In 2016, we were working with ACTS Housing, which is a, you know, neighborhood organization in Washington Park and in the Midtown area. They gave us access to a foreclosed house. My students and I walked into a house where a person had been evicted a few days earlier. Everything in the house was there. And one of the students, Esme, wrote later on, which actually was picked up by Wisconsin Humanities Council, she said, I walked into the neighborhood, into the house, thinking that because it's an evicted house, it's a poor house, it's poverty. But when I walked in and I saw a piano in the front space, and I saw everything that looked like my house, I suddenly realized what the human cost of eviction is. And that was incredible because I had undergraduates, she was an undergraduate student. She and other students went back and reconstructed the story of those people who were evicted, and literally the story of the house and the story of caring in the house from its beginnings in 1910s to today. And we began to see something larger than just the specific story of the house itself.
Fascinating story because it demonstrates the learning that takes place yes. when you're out in the neighborhood. Folks, wonderful discussion. Thank you so much for sharing this great, great example of how a university can connect into a neighborhood and make a difference. Mm-hmm. Terrific. That's all for this week's program. We thank Arjit Sen, Chelsea Waite, and Camille Mays for their thoughts today on the UWM Buildings, Landscape, Cultures collaborative project at the School of Architecture. Take care, everybody. We'll see you next week at the same time. I'm Tom Lujack.
You've been listening to UWM Today with host Tom Lujack, the weekly program where you get to meet the people behind one of America's top research universities, University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Playing a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin, UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Learn more at uwm.edu.